Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of experience experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it.
Hey, Zach Schaefer here.
David Ponder.
And?
Vince Ostrander.
Vince Ostrander, a blast from the past for those of you that remember hanging out with Belleville East and Belleville West guys from back in the day. Welcome back to Life Lab. And we kind of have a special episode here because Vince has his own podcast. And where are you living?
I'm living in Nashville, Tennessee.
Nashville, Ten. And we were batting it around trying to figure out what we're going to talk about here today. And we kind of finally settled on what, Dave?
We decided we were going to talk about identity evolution. So clearly, you know, it's been years since Zach or I have hung out with Vince, and we're like, we need to catch up on something, right? So how do we catch up? The first thing that you do when you talk to somebody, I mean, we just did it in the hall. It's the natural thing, right? It's like, so what are you up to, man? What are you doing?
How's your family?
Yeah. Tell me about, how do you spend your day? Yeah, what do you value?
What do you do? How do you make a living?
Yeah, exactly. So as usual, we start off with a definition. The definition of identity that I have off dictionary.com, which is a terrible definition, is the state or fact of remaining the same one or ones under varying aspects or conditions.
Wow.
Yeah, that one's bad.
That is a shit dog definition.
There's a good one on Psychology Today that basically says it's concerned with the question, who are you and what does it mean to be who you are? And it basically relates to our basic values that dictate the choices we make, like relationships and career, right? So those choices reflect who we are and what we value. So like the first thing that we did in the hall is I was like, so Vince, what's up, man? What are you doing now? And he was like, you mean as far as work? Because that's the first question everyone asks.
That's the U.S. question.
Yeah.
How do you do it in Nashville? I don't know much about it, but what I do know, it's a town of singer-songwriters, talented people who are trying to make it in that game. So when you meet someone new, is there like a protocol you do? Are you in the biz, or what do you say?
Kind of. That's the perception of Nashville, is singer-songwriter.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, I want to be a country artist. I want to write the next hit song. It's not like that anymore.
Okay.
It is. There's still that. Obviously, that's a huge market there for that, but there's also a huge medical market. Vanderbilt's there, Belmont's there, so it's more than just the perception of singer songwriter.
Nice.
So I know everyone perceives that.
I know that they have a pretty darn good tech incubator hub as well, ecosystem going on, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, actually, my wife actually worked for a startup out of San Francisco, and they had a satellite office out of Nashville.
Nice.
That's since been defunct, which most startups usually do.
Right. Absolutely.
But yeah, other than that, I mean, it's, yeah.
Well, here's what I wanted to do, if you guys don't mind. I wanted to just spend some time catching up on this recording. In a way, like, I wanted to think about, what do you remember of each other from back in the day? And I can start, if you want, with Vince, and it won't be anything too negative for the airwaves.
I was actually thinking about this on the drive up. And yeah. I have two memories. One, I probably can't say on the air for you. Because your wife will be listening.
I appreciate that.
And then I have another one with Dave as well, which is
PG.
It's very PG.
All right, let's hear the PG for Dave.
Okay. So me and Dave, I know we were probably in a lot of high school classes together, right?
Yep.
We were definitely in Spanish class, and I don't know why I was thinking about this, but so one of our projects was we had to write a book in Spanish, and. I was sitting next to Dave. He's like, you want to be a partner? I'm like, yeah, let's do it. We wrote a book about like a turkey getting hit by a truck or something like that.
In Spanish.
In Spanish.
Oh, man, if we had access
Truque
to that.
Mac, as I think I saw it.
Yeah.
What was it?
Yes, something like that.
But 2 days later, Dave wasn't there. Dave was sick. And so I had to do that damn book by myself because
Dave
had cancer.
Oh, yeah. Let's get cancer to get out of the book.
Yeah. So crazy. You could have said, yeah, I don't want to do it.
I probably should have.
When Dave wants to get out of an assignment, he commits.
You committed hardcore on that one.
Oh, that's nuts. Because I remember that same class later in the year. And not to start this out in a Debbie Downer way, but I remember I was going through treatment and stuff. And I came back to school because, you know, you got to catch up with all your classes. Came back to that Spanish class and, like, couldn't make it through the class. I was just too sick. And I was like, I got to go, you know. And obviously everyone was nice and let me go. But it's just weird that when you say stuff, right, like it brings back those memories that you had forgotten.
Yeah.
I have got a comment on this. Hold your tattoo up. So Vince has a Falcor tattoo from the Neverending Story. Can you do a Falcor voice?
Oh my god, gosh.
Dude, this is an awesome tattoo. Yeah. Who did the work?
That's Kevin Stewart in Hendersonville, Tennessee.
Wow. It is absolutely fantastic work.
It's a midlife. I call it a midlife crisis. I got it, finished it last year.
It's beautiful.
Straight up.
Seriously.
Can you do a Falcor voice?
I love children.
That's just fun.
Go back and watch that movie. The movie is creepy. Actually, don't. If you love the movie, don't go watch it.
Love will find you.
It doesn't hold up.
It doesn't hold up, in my opinion. Yeah. Atreyu.
Yeah, I remember being a kid. That movie was so
awesome. Oh, it was awesome.
But anyway, so speaking of identity, right? There are things that you choose and things you don't choose. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't choose that shit, but it's a part of my identity. If you ask anybody in high school, I'm sure 90% of people remember that.
Oh, well, I hope so. It was a huge thing. Yeah. Speaking of choices, did you choose music or did music choose you? Because Vince is an outstanding musician, both guitar player and songwriter.
Well, wait a minute. We never finished. When I asked you, hey, so what are you doing, man? You told a little story.
Share that about the decision you made.
Yeah.
The decision was I've always done music, but I've always had, I guess, as my identity, maybe if you want to say that, I've always had this work ethic where I feel like I need to make money and provide and, you know, have a great credit score.
Sure.
And all this. Yes. You can't do that necessarily by playing music right away.
Sure.
In October, my wife called me and she said, and I'm a food and beverage manager, by the way, I was, and she's like, can we go to lunch? And it was at noon. I'm like, I work in a damn restaurant. Like, I can't just run out of the restaurant at noon.
Right.
But I did. I talked to my boss. I was like, oh, great. She's going to freaking divorce me. That's fine. Whatever. And she is like, you are miserable. You're miserable right now. You've been doing this, working 6-7 days a week, and, you know, busting your hump for these people that suck.
Don't care about
you. Yeah. And so she's like, just quit your job. Just freaking quit.
Wow.
Like, she does well. She's a graphic designer, a senior designer at a local agency in Nashville. And she's like, just go back to songwriting. Go back to podcasting. If you do that, just freaking quit. And that was that. So... since then, I have pulled up some part-time stuff, but just because I do have that, I guess, the need to still provide.
Sure.
Because, as you guys know, podcasting doesn't really pay the bills. You guys.
Yeah. Yeah. My family be pretty hungry considering we haven't made – not only have we not made a dollar, we're in the hole money purchasing all our equipment.
Exactly. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Well, okay, so two questions on that. Number one, how long ago was that?
It was in October.
Okay, right on.
So recent.
So six months ago?
Yep.
And then two, I'd like us to talk about that need to provide or that need to have a good credit score, because we touched on this on our when we talked about identity last. We did self-actualization, which is basically becoming the person that you want to become. I think the step that you're talking about is amazing. Like, your wife is enabling you to build an identity that's more closely aligned with what you truly want and truly value versus the expectations and desires of others, which is, in my opinion, that's when it's like, oh, I got to have a good credit score.
Right.
I got to
live in the right neighborhood.
Yeah, be a provider. Yep. It's because you have to live up to the expectations of others. You want others to see you in a certain light as an upstanding citizen, blah, blah, blah. Even if you don't value that at all. Like, I'm not going to use credit I'm not going to go out and buy anything, so I don't need to use my credit. I don't actually value it. But That's something that others value, and for me to be considered in a good light off the bat, I have to put up this front, which is bullshit.
Well, I think your point about providing and credit scores are both correct, and that's the way people think. And I love the way that how you said that, because that is probably a way, God, my credit score's in the trash, I'm such a bad person kind of mentality. I think they're different. I think the need to provide is more evolutionary, going back to the hunter-gatherer mentality, right? I don't want to get into gender and all that kind of stuff, but at the end of the day, a lot of men have that need, that internal drive to feel, I need to provide for whoever, my wife, my boyfriend, my kids, whatever it is, and I think that it's there.
You're right.
And I think a lot of women have that too, don't get me wrong there. Yeah. But then the credit score, I think that is the more compare and despair and kind of mentality.
Well, we talked about not being able to build the identity you want to because of money.
Right.
And so, yeah, let's break those apart, right? So the desire to provide, I believe, is something that's ubiquitous for all people. And there's something about building self-worth there, right? Feeling like you're producing something of value and contributing to your tribe, right? So that when you're a hunter, that's what you're doing.
Right.
So so I think that that's a valid point. But on the flip side, yeah, there's still something about putting up a front and driving a car that's a certain kind, and you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like
just
what do
so
you
people,
think, Vince?
Yeah.
About the,
anything.
Anything?
Yeah.
yeah, it's as far as when you're talking about like if, to provide or to have that credit score, you're talking about how society perceives you, how your friends perceive you.
Sure.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I. Yeah, you're right. It does go back to that hunter-gatherer kind of thing. It's very primitive. Like,
yeah,
you know, we're talking about identity evolution, but have we really evolved?
Ooh, good point.
I mean, since the dabbing, it's
bring
home the buffalo or whatever.
Bring home the bacon, so to speak.
Literally.
Well, when we talked about an episode before where we about accumulation, I forget which one, whatever, wealth and accumulation and getting things, and I call it when people up their house size, it's I need a bigger cave. I call my house my cave. I guarantee back in the day it was the guy that was the best hunter, the biggest, strongest guy. He got the biggest cave. And you're right. That really hasn't changed at all. We've dressed it up a lot more.
Well, no. And I would say if we're talking about this from an evolutionary perspective, like our minds and bodies evolved so slowly compared to our society. And we just haven't caught up. There's no way we can catch up. But that being said, okay, so – you walked in and you quit your job.
But you made the decision.
But still, like, but still, you mulled it over and you said, okay, so what is my desire to continue to, quote unquote, provide and be a, you know, try to have, you know, money coming in? Is that greater or is my passion for being a singer-songwriter and doing podcasting and really pursuing those things, is that greater? And you made that decision. Your wife didn't make that decision for you. She just told you, hey, I'm giving you the ability to do that, or I'm supporting you if you want to make that decision. You're the one who made that decision. How did that feel? What went through your head when you were doing that?
It was scary as hell, first of all. And actually, and it was really actually hard because, you know, for 20 years, you've been always had a boss. Like, yes, I'll do this, sir. Blah, 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 sir. And actually, and I always bring this up. I did a podcast with Billy Cassano.
Yep.
And we had this prolific thing with freedom comes responsibility. Because, yeah, I was like, oh my God, I don't have a job right now, but I have to be my own boss. Like American Gladiators is on at noon.
Right.
I could watch that. Matlock's on at 9 a.m.
Yes. Right.
Like, I can beat off if I want.
You can do whatever you want.
Do whatever I want. Yes. So it was very hard for me to get over that hump of, like, shit, I need to do something. Like, I need to work.
So how did you do that? What kind of mechanism did you create or structure for yourself to go from being at a job in a brick-and-mortar building to trying to set something up for yourself?
Honestly, I'm still struggling.
Trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. But, you know, you just kind of got to do it. Like, if that's something you want, then you need to do it.
Right.
Well, I think today's evidence that you're doing it.
Right.
You could be watching Matlock in Nashville.
Yeah, we started this at 8:30 a.m. CST, and so he was here.
Yeah, you drove to St. Louis, right? And you got a pretty busy schedule today.
Yeah.
Do you not?
I do. I'm doing at least 4 podcasts today.
That's fantastic. That's a real busy schedule.
That's dedication.
Let's switch back. I want to go back to the past a little bit. So you said you had a story about me that you didn't want to share, which I appreciate that. And we heard from Dave. I want to share with you what I remember, because to me, the idea of identity evolution isn't just outward facing what other people think about us and who we are, but also what we think about ourselves, not just in the current moment, but who we were in the past. And so here's what I remember about you, and some of this might even just be wrong.
Well, we drank a lot.
We drank a lot, and we did other things a lot. But I remember it was mainly one big summer we hung out together. You hung out a lot with Bart and Neil, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yep. That was the right before.
Did you work at Applebee's with Lindsay?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Okay, so that's correct in my head. You played music. I remember Awesome Singer-Songwriter. You helped get those guys more into music, and they both still are to this day.
And Neil, you still got my amp.
Well, we can get that from you. Neil, we're going to get that from you. You played a set. I remember Fletcher's had either opened new or was opening, and you used to play up there. Is that accurate?
Yeah, we used to play there quite a bit.
Okay,
yeah.
So good. I'm still on. Were you good at darts? Weren't you a good dart player?
Still am.
Okay, so I was like, man, I think this was Vince, but I'm pretty hazy.
No, that's good.
No, we worked on the same dart league.
Okay, that's what I thought.
We soft hit.
But again, a lot of clogged up brain stuff going on from back in the past. Yeah. Other than that, I just remember you being chill, never having any shit with you, just whatever bullshit competitive young man stuff. I always just enjoyed hanging out with you because I'm not musically talented, so I loved it when these guys would get their guitars out. You know, we're drinking beers and playing cards and whatever, and they just dive into song. It was fantastic.
See, I think it's really interesting talking about this because the guitar playing and dart playing aspects of your character, right, because we're talking about identity,
right.
I never knew about those in high school at all. I mean, did they exist even back then?
Not really, no.
Yeah.
I think I was maybe a junior when I first started playing. But
mm-hmm.
So the way I remember you is just exactly that story that you described, right? Like, I liked hanging out with you, and I wanted to spend more time with you. I liked your sense of humor. You were always chill.
Yep.
Even if we were hanging around guys who were razzing each other, you were quick to...
Even when I was a hothead, he never was.
You were quick to calm things down.
You were a hothead.
Yeah. I was a hothead.
Yeah, so there was something that was calming about you that was cool in groups and stuff. So, yeah, and it just never worked out to the point where you and I hung out just each other for an extended period of time, which is a weird thing. Like, I would have loved to have done that.
What were those apartments called that those guys lived in? Do you remember? There was a name for them.
I cannot remember.
It was just Roger Avenue. Nice. It was just straight debauchery. I mean, the cops should have came in and just shut down the whole thing.
They were there a couple times.
Oh man,
what was it? What were we shooting each other with? Airsoft guns?
Oh yeah. I mean, it was just. I don't know how
the police did come because we were shooting each other with airsoft guns, and I think somebody thought like.
We were shooting each other. How did any normal human being live in that complex? Yeah. It doesn't. Oh man! I think you were there the night that some young ladies came over. I believe we told them all I was a pig farmer from Milan, Italy, for 4 hours.
Okay, you're gonna tell the story.
We
now.
Lied to
these young
ladies. I
don't want to
bring it
up. But you brought it up. So.
Well, nothing bad happened. It was just straight lying. And oh no, Kelly! Kelly was the pig farmer. Kelly Tompkins was the pig farmer from Milan. We perfected the art of lying, which is coming up on a future episode.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. But it's funny, what did you lie about? Your identity.
Kelly's identity. Mm. Kelly's identity. Yes, absolutely. And he dove into the details, so to speak, of what a pig farmer does, and we acted like he had all this money, and why he was hanging out with us, and it was insane.
You know what? Why is it so fun to lie about your identity?
I don't know.
It feels free, doesn't it?
Yeah, freedom, freeing. You can play a character maybe you've always wanted to play.
Exactly, yeah.
I think the pressure of being you and withholding all your values, upholding all your values, and like proving yourself to other people is gone in those moments, right? Who cares?
You can set down the hard stuff.
Who cares if those girls don't like the pig farmer? That ain't you.
That ain't me. Well, you can set down the hard things, the decisions, the choices, like he had to just make with his wife and what he talked about with Billy Cassano, freedom is responsibility. So when you're playing a character, you have no responsibility. You don't have to have integrity. You don't have to have these values that are important to have a normal, somewhat, society. You can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah. Just like that's why we watch TV and movies. And
right.
To get away from our self-proclaimed reality.
Well, tell me, what's the identity then of Vince as singer-songwriter? How is that evolving into the future? You know, what do you foresee yourself as currently, or who do you want to be in that realm?
I mean, obviously the goal is to get cuts and do all that kind of stuff and make money off of it and
mm-hmm.
get that credit score back up. But it's really tough. It's really tough in Nashville. 10 years ago, there was 3,000 staff songwriters. Now there's like 300. It's just gone.
So tell us a little bit more about what that stat means for people that might not know.
Well, basically, since in the past 10 years, since the we can cuss, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck
music
no.
Music industry went to shit. Obviously, I mean that's not a secret.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look on any liner notes, at the top 40 country or pop even for that matter, you'll see the same writers over and over and over and over and over. And it used to be a lot more, I guess, diversified.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a
yeah? Word? Like people wrote their own shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the big country guy that's popular now? He used to just write, but apparently then he came out and sang. Big guy,
oh,
big
Stapleton.
Beard. Yeah. He was a writer for a long time,
yeah,
right?
He's a friend of a friend of mine.
And then people were like, dude, you need to play your own stuff. That's the story I was told.
He had a bunch of cuts, actually.
He
was fine. Like, he probably didn't have to be an artist.
Gotcha.
But he did.
Okay.
But so, as far as evolving, like, I used to kind of want to do that. Like, I toured. I've been through 40 states.
Wow.
And I don't want to do that anymore. I want to go back to just write. I want somebody else to do it.
So you want to just write the songs that other people
sing?
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
So like right now, what's your creative process? Everyone has a different one. Are you a binger and purger? Do you just find inspiration and epiphany, jot it down, or do you incrementally put songs together?
I would say epiphany / incrementally.
Okay.
Which is kind of a weird way to do it, but yeah, it's usually done. Yeah, I don't sit down and write. I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people do. In Nashville, how it works is you go to an office for 3 hours. It's 3 hours. Every session is 3 hours. Sit down. You pump out a song. If it's good, it's good. If it's not, it's not. Blah, blah, blah. I cannot do that. I've never been able to do that. So I'll be sitting watching Matlock at 9 a.m., strumming my guitar.
Nice.
And if something pops up, it pops up. If not, I go beat off.
Nice. All right. No, that's, I mean, so everyone probably has their own process, right?
I don't beat off that much.
Vince's involved beating off in Matlock. Hopefully not too Matlock.
He is so hot. No, what I was going to say is, so everyone has their own process. Yours is that. And when talking about identity, right, like, You can be overviewed, and then you can get into detail, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, whenever you hit big, right, and like, you have all those cuts, people are going to be describing you, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, that guy, man, he never goes in. He doesn't do office sessions, you know what I mean? He just sits at home, watches Matlock, strums his guitar, and that's how he does it, and it will inspire them,
right?
You know what I mean?
The story, yeah. the story we tell.
Yeah, it is.
But the fucking shitty thing about that, in my opinion, is he's doing it now. I guarantee he has songs right now that could be played by the artist that he would like to see playing them, and people would love them. That's why I think that business is so fickle, because it's like you get the words or an instrument in the right person's hand who's got that fame platform behind them, and it's big. And then they're like, Vince does his creative thing with Matlock. It's like, it doesn't matter. It's out. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I will say, I think that...
Like, people will get inspired behind anything. It's the story that's important.
I think that applies across many businesses.
But yeah.
Right place, right time is the best way to make your way.
Of course.
But that being said...
harder I work, the luckier I get.
Yeah, well, persistence, right? Making opportunities, being able to recognize open doors. If you're not doing it, then it's never going to happen. So, with that being said, you committed to...
He made
it. Is that the two
awesome
things that you
decision.
Committed to, right? So you committed to getting serious about singing, songwriting, and getting serious about podcasting,
Yeah, still working on it.
Yeah.
And do you have kids, you and your wife?
I have Elvis and Bacon. They're dogs.
Okay, awesome. What kind of dogs?
Jack Russells.
Oh, good Lord. They're more energy than my dog. Yeah, well
Zach,
done.
Yeah, Zach's always been into boxers.
Yeah.
High-energy dogs.
Well, you're talking about all this in the decision, and one thing that I think we haven't touched on that's extremely important to identity evolution, and we have three other words written on the whiteboard, were, are, and becoming. So like who we were, who we are, who we're becoming. But in Vince's scenario, when he made – again, man, that's just so awesome that you did that. So few people do that. I can only think of one other person I know right now, and that's Wes Hoffman, the recruiter and networker. He got fired from a corporate whatever. He hated it. Started his own business. He's just one of the happiest people I know, you know, just connecting, networking, and recruiting for people. But you made that decision because you both had something else. You had relationship support. You both of your wives said, you know what, you do what you want to do because I believe in you, and you need to believe in yourself, basically, is what. So where does having a spouse or a friend, a partner, a parent, it doesn't matter, fall into someone's identity evolution? Because I don't think you'd be where you are without your wife, and I know I wouldn't, and you certainly wouldn't, yeah. Dave.
I'd probably be dead, for sure.
I might be too.
Yeah.
You might be too.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. Yeah. Crazy.
Mine would be from consumption. So Dave would be from cancer, maybe.
Cancer and loneliness.
And yeah. Loneliness. And Vince would consumption?
Consumption.
Me and Vince would be dead over
choking on our opioid.
Natty lights or something.
Yeah. There's some support.
No, that's a good point. Like, yeah, your spouse does evolve your identity. I mean, it makes you who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And you also, I guess you have to see their identity as well to – I don't know, you kind of become one identity.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's a good point.
How long have you been with your wife?
Is she going to listen to this? 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah. We've been married for 5.
Okay.
But yeah.
How long have you and Lauren been together now? Like 17?
Yeah. So.
You were like high school sweethearts, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We were 16. So mm-hmm. Like 20 years. You know,
you were driving sophomore year, and you were, I remember you were driving her around,
yeah,
because her and Sarah were friends then. Sarah couldn't drive, but you could,
yeah. So it'd be like 20 years,
20 years,
and then, yeah, we've been married for 13.
Nice. Damn. I got mine on March 28th. We have our 9th wedding anniversary, and we've been together for more than that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's a cool.
10 or 12, 12, 11.
Yeah. Were you guys on and off?
No. Well, I was engaged to Sarah. I don't know if you remember Sarah. High school sweetheart. So we were engaged, and then we split up. We were like, you know what? She wanted to grow her career, and we just weren't happy together. And we're both much happier now. And so then I went down to A&M to finish school. She grew, and her career did well. Well, that last summer, we had broke up a while back. I met Kizzy, my current wife. And so that summer, I was real honest. I'm like, well, I was engaged. I'm married. I'm moving to Texas at the end of the summer. So this is literally a summer fling. If you're into it, cool. If not, no worries. And I was that blunt, which sounds so terrible, but I think it was honest. And she was like, no, I'm down. And then at the end, you know, she was like, well, do you want to keep it going? I'm like, no. It was so mean, but I'm like, no, I got to give this a shot. And then within 1 month of being down there, I'm like, oh, that was the wrong decision. This is an awesome person. So then surprised her. We visited a bunch, and then she came down. I came back in December and then asked her to move back that next semester, and she did. So.
Huh.
Yeah.
She's changed your identity.
Oh, yeah, a little bit. Well, he's like, I remember you. You were a hothead.
Well, and you have a
– I was.
You have a strong character. You have a strong identity, right? So, like – you have sharp edges.
Yes, I do.
We'll say that. And if there were like two puzzle pieces that would fit well together, I think Kizzy fits your puzzle pretty damn well. Yeah. And she helps smooth out those sharp edges.
I just think of the Paula Abdul video with the cartoon cat.
Mm-hmm. Opposites attract.
Yeah, I'm the cartoon cat. She's Paula Abdul.
That's true. That's true. So, yeah.
Anyway.
She's half black.
Well, her name is Kizzy.
But, I mean, I would imagine – if you got all our wives in a room together and ask them the same question, they would say that we've, you know, obviously they've impacted our identity. We've evolved together.
Yeah.
But I would say it's a two-way street. They would all say the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think they would say? How would you say that?
Well, I mean, one big thing for me is I quit drinking. recently. No, it wasn't from Kizzy saying you need to quit, but don't get me wrong, that one of the main reasons was because I needed to become a better person, and just internally it was fucking me up. And we've already talked about that, but absolutely, you know, the amount of notes that she wrote me over the years being like, dude, when are you going to quit? Well, you tell me you're going to someday, when's it going to happen? And yeah, so that was huge. So she's made me become a better person like 10 times over.
Mine would be a bigger theme. It's not like one thing. It would be before, if I had never met Lauren, I think I might have a lot more unrealized potential. Hmm. Like, you knew me when I just wasn't driven.
No.
And, you know, I whatever talents and skills and abilities I had, I was not driven to make the most of them. And her drive and, you know,
organization
abilities and everything have just inspired me. And maybe I'm taking it too far now. She might say I'm taking it too far with everything I've jam-packed in my life. But and you've inspired me that way as well. Yeah. But
what about you, Vince? Yeah. Your wife. What's her name?
Sarah.
Okay.
Not ironically.
Different weird. Sarah.
Different Sarah. That's not the same one. I didn't steal her.
That'd be a real funny podcast show.
No, it's the same kind of thing what Dave was just saying. It's she and I struggle. This is my biggest problem. Is like I'm driven in my head, but she does push me, push. Like sometimes to fights, but at the same time, I'm like, okay, yeah, you're right. Like the quitting thing. Like, do it. Like, why aren't you doing that? Why are you watching Matlock at 9 o'clock?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you taking a break to watch American Gladiators at noon?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, yeah, it's the same kind of thing.
That's
she
awesome.
drives, you know, and that's good for us. Like, going back to why we're all probably still alive.
100%. The stats are very clear on young men getting married. Marriage literally extends the lives of men. That's a fact. That's a 100% statistical fact. Yeah. Because of these, especially tied to consumption and just illicit decisions that we made. But I think it goes deeper than that to just the psychology, evolution, just everything you guys talked about. You know, then we could get real interesting and say, well, then do polygamists live longer because they're married to more than one wife? I'd like to see that.
There's only one way to be immortal.
Get as many wives as you can.
Well, no, because Genghis Khan ain't still around.
True.
And he's Warren, about as much as you possibly
Warren know. Jeffs is currently in prison, so.
Right. What's his name? Wilt Chamberlain.
Yeah, was
Wilt the Stilt, but he wasn't married, man. He was doing one and done.
About having women making you immortal.
Well, where are you guys going? Identity evolution. So we know where you are. Vince made an outstanding decision to choose what James Altucher says: choose yourself. Chose himself with his wife supporting him, so that in my opinion, when he looks back on his life, if he chooses to have kids or not, or he's telling his story to the general public, he's like, I chose myself.
And a small side comment. I feel what you're saying about having to be self-driven, because Zach and I own businesses, and we've come to the understanding that when you quit a boss-driven job and go to a business-driven job, you just get different bosses. Your clients, the people who are paying
right.
you just have multiple, many bosses.
Every right? entrepreneur has bosses, yeah. Whether it's your government contracts, your vendors and suppliers you're getting your shit from. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's just that, you know, you can change your bosses. Mm-hmm. It's more flexible in that way. You can, you know, get rid of the bosses that you don't like.
Yeah.
So what do you do to keep yourself driven? Who are your bosses? Who are you answering to? Mm. You know?
Is that a question?
That's to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you're right. You never will have a boss.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Whether it's a client or a real boss or for yourself, for that matter. I mean.
Yourself. Yeah.
Yeah, you're your own boss. I mean, anybody can fire themselves or quit or.
Do you drug test yourself?
check your background.
Background check on this son of a bitch.
Well, no, I mean, so I think ultimately what we're saying is that you're your own boss. But I think it's funny that we came to that conclusion, because the last time Zach and I talked about this, we talked about being beholden to not just from a business perspective, the people that you're trying to make happy who pay you, but also to the people who you play a certain role with. Like in this Psychology Today article, it talks about a major task of self-development during early adolescence being the differentiation of multiple selves as a function of social context. So you're a different you when you're around your mom and dad than you are around your close friends, right?
Well,
so
yeah.
So ultimately, when we, you know, we were talking in terms of what is it that you do for money or for providing or for even just for passion, right? What are your goals? And you have a certain set of bosses in those instances. And then you switch your role, right? And then I become David the father. And interestingly enough, I would say my partner is somewhat of a boss in that situation. My kids, who I am very responsible to, become bosses, even though they don't have decision authority. You get what I'm saying? But yeah. Ultimately, it's yourself at the end of the day.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy for me to think about this because, we didn't want to talk about ourselves. We wanted to hear more about you.
Yeah.
But I think of my life in like a Venn diagram, you know, the circles, and then they overlap. And where they overlap is in just trying to teach and show people to be better communicators. Because at the end of the day, I think that's all we have is the connections we form on this planet with other people's. That's a meaningful life. What's the purpose of life? Sharing the life with others that we love, period. And you do that with communication. So as my professor identity, my identity is curiosity, helping people discover their potential by questioning and helping them question themselves and pushing them beyond and creating stretch assignments. My identity as a consultant is the exact opposite. They hire me for certainty, for expertise. They want solutions that are already developed so I can hand them something and say, just do this. With the Post Sports Bar and Grill, you used to work in the food and beverage. So my role with them is helping build out back-end systems. So it's advisory. I'm advising the founder and CEO of our fantasy sports bar chain to say, you know, here's what I would recommend doing. But at the end of the day, he can make that decision or not do that decision. So I absolutely have to have very clear shifts, because if I bring that wrong one in, it could lead to negative consequences, if that makes sense.
So what you're saying about the Venn diagram is, all of those are the external circles, mm-hmm. and then the middle is just
the communication. Being an effective and efficient communicator will lead to productive bottom lines, will lead to people reaching their potential, will lead to business success, will lead to personal success, personal happiness. That's what I believe.
I like that. And it's interesting, all the different roles that you said that you played, too. I mean, we play a different role on this podcast.
Well, sure.
Too.
Yeah.
Right?
It's just piquing curiosity and hopefully challenging people to do something new or think about something new.
Yeah, if
you were going to say something, yeah. Then sorry.
No, so you're saying basically, we all have multiple identities.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it evolves into this one little P in the Venn diagram.
It can. For me, it does.
For you.
Yeah.
I just thought of that. Yeah, of course. If you go to, I listened to your last podcast mm-hmm. about philosophy and spirituality. I think we're all atheist or agnostic. Mm-hmm. But if you go to church, you're going to wear that tie. And you're not going to say the F word,
right? Mm-hmm.
But when we all go out and throw darts, we're gonna get down, take right. shots at Jameson, and
whatever,
and bang some chicks.
That's right.
Not really.
People wear their hats or their identity. I call them masks.
Yeah.
You know, and as a consultant, my style is I'm very candid. I try to be myself as much as possible, but I always use that phrase. I'll be like, look, we need to take off our masks. That has become a mask in itself, saying that kind
of. You know, you said communication is the middle of that Venn diagram. And I think that's your tool. Mm-hmm. That's your, like, chosen tool in the middle of that Venn diagram. But I think in the middle of that Venn diagram is, like, you without the mask, right? No? So let's think about it in this way, right? So, Vince, you're on this podcast. We're talking about ourselves. We're talking about our backgrounds, our history, the things that we remember about each other. And it wouldn't even have occurred to me that one of those circles in that Venn diagram, not by my choice and not by my building, is the fact that I'm a cancer survivor, right? If we're talking about, because it builds my identity.
Well, sure it does.
And so some of these things, they are parts that you choose and you want to build. And they take effort. They take care and maintenance and giving. Some of them are just there. And that will always be there for one reason or another, like that, right? Like, that's going to be a part of my identity. And then in that middle of the Venn diagram, that's me That's just me.
Well, again, we could get real philosophical here, right? Because postmodernists believe there is no such thing as identity. It's constant. They would basically, if you had a visual, if you're a true postmodernist, modernism is about certainty, right and wrong, black and white, one way to do things. Postmodernism, in their funeral, in their box, or what is it called? The you get buried. A coffin, thank you. There'd just be 1,000 masks, all of our different masks, and the face would be blank. And it reminds me of this Twilight Zone where this dude's family is all fucked up, and his last dying wish is for them to put on the mask that he believes actually truly represents them, and they become that mask. And so I while I'm saying, do I have a true authentic self? Yeah, I guess. But at the end of the day, here's all I want to do. Be the self I ought to be because I want to be that person. In whatever sphere or Venn diagram I'm in, that's all that matters. I don't care what the mask is or if it's a mask or if it's not a mask. If I'm doing what I should do, what I think I should do because I want to do that, then I'm doing the right thing.
I'll agree with that. And I think that the one thing that recurringly feels fulfilling to me, like we talk about being a provider and making money and showing up to all these people, right, is two things. And this is going to get really whatever. But it's kind of like serving others and doing so out of a position of love, you know. Like if you listen to our money episode, I talked a lot about debt slavery and how mm-hmm. I think that's wrong. And so like I was thinking about all the goals. You went into all the goals of each Venn diagram, right, mm-hmm. like advising the post sure. and – sculpting young minds.
My functions in those yeah. in those occupations.
So I didn't think, I mean, I have each one of those in each of the areas of my life as well, but it's like if I had one underlying thing that I would like to do, it would be A, to serve others, and B, you know, one of the things that I think is wrong with our society is that we're born into this position of debt slavery, and I'd love to free as many people as I could. Yeah. And so I'm choosing to do so starting with my children. And if I'm successful with that, I'm then going to branch out from there.
Yeah, I'm next, right?
Zach is at the very end of that list.
Vince, what about you? So when we asked about music earlier, you know, you talked about money, and that makes sense. You made the decision 6 months ago, so you're like, I got to still feed my wife and Bacon, and what was the other one's name?
Elvis.
But in addition to that, why singer-songwriter? Like, why is that a meaningful mask, if you will, for you?
Well, I think as you grow up, you find out what you're good at.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm good at waiting tables.
Sure.
Managing restaurants, which is not fun for me. I'm good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have very low self-esteem, but I think I'm good at, you know, playing music. So, and I love it.
Well, so, I remember you were good at it 15 years ago, so I would assume you continue to play for 15 years. You're pretty damn good at it now.
And I think a lot of people will share that sentiment, right?
Absolutely.
Like, I found out what I was good at, but I don't like that. But it, you know, it's what puts yeah, food like, on the table.
So you work in IT and risk management, you said. Do you like it, or are you just good at it?
I mean, sometimes I do, but it's like 90% of any day. And I had this conversation with Lauren. So Lauren went out, and she's doing some wedding planning now. And I had this conversation with Zach just a little bit ago. She is a planner organizer at her core. Like, I don't know if that would be the only thing in the middle of her Venn diagram, but it would be really close. It would mm-hmm. be that inner ring for sure. And so we've always talked about how she needs to be doing something like that if she wants to fulfill her passion. Unfortunately, the way you break into any industry like that is by doing the crap work, the grunt work that no one wants to do at first. So.
Yes.
Ashley Erlinger. You remember Ashley Erlinger?
Yeah, she has her own business.
She has her own company, and so Lauren is doing 3 or 5 weddings with her this summer. And so the very first one was right here at the Marriott downtown, and Lauren went and did it, and we were conversing, and I told Zach, I think there's a 50-50 chance that either she's going to come back and say, yep, this is me at my core, like I said, and and even though this was the least glamorous part of it, the day of directing, answering questions, grunt work type, instead of doing the cool planning, fun, and you know what I mean, imaginary beginning part, that's the work everyone wants to do, right? But you don't just break in and get to do that. So I was like, I think there's 50-50 chance she's going to come back and say, I just can't do this. Like, yeah, like that's a part of my core, but the grunt work isn't good enough, and there's 80% of the work is going to be the grunt work, and so it's not worth that 20% of the passion. Or I thought she would come back and say, nope, this is it. This is me. This is what I love. And sure enough, it was the latter. She came back, and she was like, I recognize that this is the grunt work. She's like, but the environment was, you know, happy and lively, and people were, you know, looking to me for direction, and that's what I'm really good at. And she's like, I just, it was more fulfilling than it she even thought it was going to be. So she's definitely going to continue going down that road. And so that's what we're talking about here, right? Like,
yeah.
When you ask me, what do I like? Information security risk and security, you know, 80% of the time it's grunt work and no. But then on the flip side, I did a closing meeting the other day with a client in a really fancy environment, and I'm sitting there talking with the CEO who flew in from Texas to, and yeah, that was awesome. You know, that felt empowering, and I had passion in that. So that'd be my answer.
I got you. And then obviously you're a Zach, you're a communications. See, shrugs it off. Yeah, but obviously you love it because, we're doing this podcast for nothing. I mean, right?
Yeah, this is a passion project.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously as a communicator, you're doing this as a passion. So obviously you like it.
Twofold. You nailed it. It's a passion. So with any passion, there's ego gratification there. I feel good doing this. It starts off my day right. I was in a shitty mood earlier. I had a really bad day yesterday, just depressed, just down for no reason, you know, just one of those blue days. And so I kind of woke up with the remnants of that, and I was trying to choose, be good, and I was excited for this. And then we had a miscommunication. I thought we were doing this at my home office, and he's like, no, we're here. So then I had it all set up. I'm like, fuck. So then I get down here, and I'm kind of like, whatever. But then as soon as we start, it reinvigorates my day. It gets me going. Mm-hmm. The flip side of that is what we're sharing with others. I want people to truly take something away. I want them to get the energy that I feel in this room with you guys. You know, I haven't seen Vince in 10, 12 years, literally, yeah. You know, and I just feel like, hey, we could go throw darts. You know, the only difference would be I wouldn't be drinking beer. I'd be having old duels or something, but we could go throw darts. Yeah, you drink two for me.
I mean, I was comfortable enough to be like, you could stay at my house with right. my family. You know?
I know. Yeah,
which I'm going to come over by the night
over
tonight.
12 years. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, sure, stay at my house.
I wanted to say this, though. You mentioned the grunt work, both of you. Real quick, what's grunt work in singer-songwriter world?
Well, for singer-songwriter, it's – you got to – I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam Carolla always says, show up and work for free if you have to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's – to me, that's grunt work.
Yeah.
You know, how many people – I can't name them off the top of my head, but I'm sure there's so many people who started out in a mailroom who are now like a CEO of a company.
Sure.
You know, just because they showed up, they did their damn job.
Woody Allen said 70% of success is showing up to work.
Yeah. I think that's on the low end.
Yeah, you're right. I absolutely agree. So grunt work is just doing your whatever your discipline, your method, your mechanism is, write those songs, do what you need to do. And over time, it'll lead to somewhere where you want to be.
Yeah.
How about getting it out? Let's say
how does that process work?
So you're sitting there watching Matlock, and all of a sudden you're like, yes, that's it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, do you have an agent? Right. How does that all work?
Yeah, and then you're like, okay, I got to get this out.
You got to get a publisher, and
okay.
That's the easiest way. I just recently joined this songwriter company. Not mm-hmm. company.
My collaborative or incubator?
Co-op, yeah. Okay. And, you know, you kind of pitch them. They kind of help you get some stuff out like that. Yeah.
But it's a mass. One of the greatest tips I've gotten from a guy I admire, David Fields, is in any industry you're in, it doesn't matter. It could be anything. Be prolific. Be prolific. Do a lot of whatever it is you're being paid to do, even if you're paying yourself, just be prolific. Do it a lot. And a lot of it's going to suck, and that's okay. But that 10% that's not suck or that's beautiful or that's meaningful, that's where you'll earn your income. And that's tough, man. To be consistently prolific is hard work.
Yeah, if you ask any successful songwriter, it's right. I mean, 98% of it's going to be shit.
Right.
But that 2% will get you millions of dollars.
Well, Thomas Edison was always like, you can tell who the most creative person is by looking at the wood shavings on the floor. And what he's saying is the more shit, they're just they're going through it. They're going to create. Bill Belichick said the same thing, basically. He's like, how I got to where I am is back in the 80s doing all the film work that no one wanted to do. I did the grunt work, the work that no one wanted to do. I volunteered for it. That was his foreground and what everybody noticed. But in the background, he was putting together his strategy and his vision for when he would be a head coach someday. And I just think that's interesting.
So there's drive behind this, right? So, like, the first time you're doing an activity and all of a sudden you feel that burning fulfillment in that activity where you're in the zone and it just feels good and it feels easy. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That serves as the foundation of the drive for the grunt work that you do moving forward. And at some point in time, Zach, you showed me this diagram, right? There's like a roller coaster, right? Where you go through and there's a high at the beginning, right? And you're up on that high and then you crash down and you ride through the valley of despair, right? And then that valley of despair is the grunt work.
Yep.
And that passion and that drive seems like a million years ago. And you just have to remember it and try to connect with it in some way on a daily basis and push through the valley of despair. Because only after the valley of despair do you end up with the payoff, right?
Well, kind of. So you go up. Oh, great idea. I'm working hard. Okay, it's fun. Up. Valley of despair down here. But then you have to keep working hard. And if you don't push past this point, which is a second smaller hill, that's the identity crisis. If you don't push past the identity crisis, then you're quitting. You're leaving whatever that job or profession is, and you're going to do something else. But if you can push through it and you have the support like we do of our wives or a system, then you can get to that promised land, so to speak. But it's hard fucking work, and most people don't want to do it.
So I spoke about the one thing that I got passionate about. You asked me, like, well, do you like doing what you do? You know, I didn't talk about the valley of despair. And I've spent, for that one thing that I did, I've spent 100 times more in the valley of despair doing grunt work on this laptop here or at home that no one will ever want to hear about. There's no stories that come out of it. There's nothing exciting about it. It's, you know.
Technocratic.
So what is that passion for? What is that passionate moment for you? What has been that? What has served as that foundation for your drive?
Mm.
Right? Is it being on stage? Like feeling the crowd? What is it?
I think I'm in that valley of despair right now, honest with you.
Well, yeah.
That's a great question. I don't even know.
No? Like, when were you like, yes, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm going to do. You had to feel that.
But you're making an assumption, as most people do, that like a creative lightning bolt hits someone, epiphany, and it's not like that for everyone. It's just not. So like whatever he did, he made that decision to choose himself.
How's that? How did you come to that decision?
To pursue this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just the idea of it. It's in my blood. I mean, it's part of my identity, I guess, if you really want to get down to it. But there's always, you know, Zach drew a little roller coaster diagram up there. And it's kind of like a, you can't see my hand going.
Like the mine train from Six Flags. Exactly. Small mini bumps in a row. Were you really?
Yes, that's exactly what I was.
They took
thinking.
That out, by the way. It's gone now.
Oh.
Yeah, so it
sounded pretty dangerous anyways.
Yeah, it did.
But, it's always those little things like, oh, I got a song that's on one to watch, or I got a song on hold, or something like that. And then you kind of go down, and then you get caught back in the, oh, I better go back and wait tables, or I better go back and manage a restaurant, or... And then you get another song, and it's like, oh, I like this. Or you might go on tour for 2 weeks, and then that's a high. And then you go, yeah.
Nice.
I don't know if that answers your
question.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
So it's not any one thing. It's a bunch of different things.
It's kind of like a Coke bump.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Yeah, right. It's like immediate gratification for a very short period of time.
Yeah.
No. I love it because those are varying things. I gave one example of those things. It's the same with what I do, and I'm sure it's the same with what Zach does. It's like little wins propel you through the next valley, right?
Thank you for saying those words for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's exactly what
I can get off stage, hit a grand slam with a keynote or a 2-hour workshop or a great coaching session with a client, be just at such a high because I feel I'm sharing my knowledge in a way that's exciting other people, and they might want to solve some new problems in a new way because of something I shared, right? Within how many hours for me? Like 2 hours, it's gone. Like I am so bad at staying in the moment and being happy. It's just like, okay, next thing, what do I got to do next? Mm-hmm. And that's not good. So your mind train bumps, or I identify with that because it's like high, low, high, low, high, low, high, low. And you know, I'm probably undiagnosed like manic depressive, but that also keeps me sharp and gives me my edge. But then I'll have my depressed down days too. Well, I know Vince has got to wrap up because he's got like 3 or 4 more podcasts to do. I do want to throw some change challenges out there, unless you guys have any other last thoughts.
No. And I saw your change challenge you wrote, and it's awesome.
I stole your idea. Were you thinking? So, Vince, again, I know you tried to listen to a couple of ours. What we like to do at the end is just a change challenge. Because while we want people to enjoy listening, what we want them to do is just do something different. It doesn't have to be some crazy change. But I want to challenge people to find their vents, what I'm going to call their vents. Find a decision that you can make, and it doesn't need to be as life-changing as Vince's, like quit your job to pursue your passion. If you can, great, do it. But find something in your life that you feel you should be doing, playing soccer with your kids for 30 minutes a day. It doesn't matter. And just decide to do it. And know that every day is not going to be perfect and happy, and you're not going to be on the ideal side of the roller coaster screaming with a smile. It's going to suck sometimes. Right? It's not pure pleasure, I'm assuming.
No.
But you made the great decision, and it's an important story for who you are and who your identity is. So that's mine. Find your Vince moment. Make a decision.
I'll extend that with a practical exercise. Take a piece of paper and draw your identity Venn diagram, and be brutally honest with yourself when you're doing it, and include the things that you're proud of and the things that you're not proud of,
like defects,
but other people would see.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Parts of your identity. And then determine which of those things need more time, effort, maintenance, because you want them to grow, and which of those, and that time, effort, and maintenance could be like working to cut some negativity out of your life, like Zach with drinking, right? Mm-hmm. That would have been part of his Venn diagram. And it's not like it didn't take effort for that to start shrinking. He's having to put effort into that every day for that to start shrinking and go away, right? Because he doesn't want that to be part of his Venn diagram anymore. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, you know, everything that you are passionate about. So for Vince, podcasting, being a singer-songwriter, those take effort. So he has to water those and watch them grow and put real time and effort into those. Draw that on a piece of paper and then use that Venn diagram. Keep it with you and look at it.
Take a picture of it so it's on your phone too.
Yeah. And then maybe revisit it next month and see if you can draw a new one and see which of those things you think you made grow and which ones you think you made shrink.
Did some of the circles get bigger? Did some of them shrink?
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. That's nice. Anything else from you, Vince? I mean, if you got something you want to tell people to try, go ahead. If not, no worries.
As far as change, I mean, I always say this in every podcast I do. Take an improv class.
Mm.
It makes your life better.
Fantastic. Just great advice.
That's it.
All right, done. Yeah, great advice.
That brings up a challenge that we have that is unfulfilled.
Mm, the stand-up. Yeah, we got to do stand-up. We both committed to doing just, you know, a funny bone, 3 minutes. I think they get 4 minutes of stand-up.
Yeah.
So we both got a ton of material. We just need to go get it and make it happen. Mm-hmm. You know, not that it'll be even that funny, but it'll be funny to us, and it'll be something we can cross off our change challenge list.
Well, a wise man once said, fucking do it.
That's right.
That's exactly right. And I'm thinking of, like, it's a shame. I mean, we've got to go. We've got to wrap up. There's so much else we could talk about, right?
Like, well, the good thing is, well, now, you know, like he said, I'm sure we'll be on his show sometime. And then once we figure out the technology behind doing the phone call interviews, we could maybe even make this more regular, doing something over the phone with each other.
I love it.
No, that'd be great. I'd love to.
Absolutely. Nice. Right. Well, that is it.
Yeah, let's wrap up, guys. Let's say, you know, we got those change challenges out. I'm serious. Like, go out and make some effort on those, because these are truly life-changing. They're how you build your identity, and your identity is the life that you have to live. So with that being said,
experiment with life.
Experiment with life.